G'day, I'm Osher Ginsberg.
And I'm Charlie Clawson.
We are two dads who, when we found out we were going to be dads, went looking for a podcast that could help us navigate what it means to be a dad in the modern world.
I mean, there were parenting podcasts, but they all seemed to be aimed at mums, or at the very least, mums and dads.
Yeah, there were no podcasts for dads specifically, and certainly not dads who want to be hands-on and do their share of raising their children.
So we started Dad Pod, a podcast by dads, for dads who don't want to be shit dads.
Each week we share our own stories from the good and the bad to the thermonuclear tantrums, as well as talk with some of the biggest experts in the field to help all of us become better dads.
So if you're a dad, a mum dad, or a dad-to-be, search Dad Pod where you get your podcasts.
The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I am Will Anderson, and joining me, it's a hamofop, Justin Hamilton is back. Hello, Justin Hamilton.
Hello, and something terrible happened to me last night, which you're going to be rapt about.
Okay, great. Good. Dive in.
You're going to be very excited by this. So people might not know, but I had COVID, and then a month later I got the flu. And so I got pretty
good.
Wiped out.
Good stuff.
By the way, already on a tangent, this is how I got the flu. Caught up with a friend that I had missed her 40th. It was nearly time for her 42nd. I was in Adelaide. I said, I'll take you out for dinner. We catch up. She comes up, hugs me, kisses me on the cheek, sits down and says, I have had the worst flu. And I'm like, why did all of this just happen? Like, I missed your 40th by 2 years. I can miss it by another fucking 6 months. And she said, don't be a nana. COVID's over. And I said, well, it's great that you're living in Narnia, but this is not a good thing. 2 days later, I got the flu. Guess what? Mildly furious, passed it now. But anyway.
COVID, let's just be very fucking clear about this. COVID is not
it's
over.
It's not over.
COVID is doing better than ever,
mate.
In Australia in particular. Yeah. Like, COVID's never had it so good.
Yeah, it's
stepped
up.
If you're COVID at the moment, you're like, these are sweet, sweet times to be COVID. Oh. Like, it's all over the joint.
This
like,
is great.
Everyone's got COVID. I, last week, sorry, just another tangent before we get into it.
Sounds
so
normal.
Our Gruen set is, like, still a pretty secure set in regards to COVID as we can be. But the truth of it is that everybody is now living out in a world. Like, I was at the airport 2 days ago, and I reckon 30% of people there in an airport were wearing masks. Like, 30%.
Yeah.
In an airport.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that even by doing something like that, as careful as I'm being around COVID, like, you can pick up COVID. So I'm not going to judge anyone to do with our crew who, like, brings COVID in now. It's harder than ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and people can't test every day. It is unaffordable for them to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, our director, this is, and I'm not going to dob anyone in, but he's one of the few people, because we mask, like, when we're making the show, but when you're on the panel, like, you obviously have to take off your mask for sound and, you know, conversation and those sort of things. And the director and I will often have, like, conversations that are as probably close face-to-face as I would have a conversation with anyone, because he's, you know, directing me, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the next day he had a bit of a sore throat, so he did a test, which is the right thing to do, and, you know, had mild symptoms of COVID. So I had been a very face-to-face close contact of him.
Yeah.
And so I cancelled any plans that I had. I absolutely tried to do the right thing, which was to stay inside, test every day, like, leave it a whole bunch of days to know that I didn't have COVID. Now, I was lucky in some ways, because during that period of time, Justin, not only did it just rain torrentially in Sydney, like, for, you know, for all those days.
Yep.
So there was no incentive to go out of the house anyway. It was fucking horrible outside.
Yep.
Why would you want to go outside?
Yep.
And then inside was test match cricket from Sri Lanka with Australia and then England playing India.
Yep.
And I watched every ball of both of those test matches. And then on the Monday, it was my dad's birthday.
Oh.
And never have I got him a better present.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, for me and my dad to have a conversation for an hour on Monday morning about the England, because as I was watching it, I was like, Who can I talk to this? Like, no one else is watching India versus fucking England. And it was the most amazing test match. Right. Like, it was one of the best. And I probably enjoyed it more than any other test match I've watched in a very long time, because I barrack for Australia. So when Australia are playing, and I, you know, care about the players and their stories, and so, you know, you're not always guaranteed that that is going to be a positive result. Whereas these two teams, like India and England, playing this super entertaining brand of cricket in a game where it looked like for the first 2.5 days India were going to smash them, and then England, like, made one of the best it was fucking amazing. Great. And I'm like, there's no one I can talk to about this. And then on Monday, I was like, oh, fuck, it's Dad's birthday.
Yeah.
I bet Dad watched it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we talked. Yeah. It was the best.
Man, you've probably risen in the ranks of the children up to third.
Yeah, up to third from my pre-existing position, which was fourth, even though there's three kids. So I'm back in. I'm back on the podium, baby.
You're getting medals.
So,
oh, man,
what I was going to say, it was the thing that I was most disappointed that I was going to miss out on was on Thursday. So this is only 2 days after I found out. So yeah. There's, even if you're testing negative at that point,
yeah,
you might still have it.
Yeah.
And so there was a funeral of a person called Pamela Swain, yes, who was a great mentor of mine, like a legend of Australian show business, not a household name, but her funeral went for 2.5 hours and Peter Garrett closed it with his personal tribute to her. Like, this is a you know, woman who had, like, so many people in comedy, like, yeah, particularly through Good News Week and The Glass House, owe so much to her. But she was a huge supporter of, like, music and independent art in Australia, and just, like, had an incredible life story. You know, something that I can talk about now because it's public now. They did it at the funeral, and she dated Bon Scott for a while, and, like, you know, had this just fucking, she was just an incredible woman, like, you know, and in an era like today, I think would be a household name, but just, like, she existed in the era where the incredible women were always the women behind the men,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Anyway, she was the best and I loved her, and she was by my side, particularly through, like, Good News Week and Glass House. Like, I got a message from somebody actually, how's this, who had Pam come and stay with them in Melbourne. This person just, like, messaged me out of the blue. They said, like, you know, 27 years ago or whatever, we were, Pam came to stay with Melbourne, and we had to dash off from dinner because Pam wanted to go and see this, like, new comedian that she'd, like, heard about and that she really, like, you know, thought was going to be, like, you know, good at comedy, you know, and
she was me. Oh, like, sorry, I thought you were going to say Peter Hellier.
She's
all right.
Thomas Bromhead. Master of 1,000 voices, Thomas Bromhead.
And they all sound like Thomas Bromhead.
So she'd come and seen me. I never knew this. She never told me this in any other time that we worked together. But a full year before I'd ended up on Good News Week, she'd come and seen me do a night of stand-up comedy,
yeah,
which is
great.
Anyway, fucking, like, anyway, to hear these stories was absolutely incredible. And anyway, I wanted to be there at the funeral, but I knew that a funeral is a non-COVID safe situation.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you're going to be hugging people, you're going to be, people are going to be crying and taking off masks, even if they're wearing them, and, you know, you're going to be I knew there'd be a good turnout for it. It's going to be in a crowded, you know, chapel. And, like, you know, Tom Gleason, I'm sure we'll get to Tom, you know, in this conversation, he actually ended up making it there. And, like, you know, Andrew Denton and a whole bunch of people, you know, showed out to actually pay tribute to her. And I would have loved to be there in that room with them. But I was like, you know what, I'll do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, the only thing I really miss is Corinne was going, and I would have loved to give Corinne a hug. I would have loved to give Andy, her son, a hug. Ted Robinson was speaking, and obviously he was so important to my life. I wanted to give Ted a hug. And, you know, that was really all that I missed because I watched it online. They do, you know, I don't know if you've done a funeral online, but it was fucking incredible. They had three different camera angles that you could switch between. Like, beautiful close-up and sound, no buffering on any of the speakers. When they went to video footage, because there was all these packages, like, the full screen went to the video. Like, it was so you felt like you were there, but there was like a camera view. So when everyone was coming into the church, for example, I had it on full view so I could see Tom or I could see Andrew and I could send them a message and say, you know, it's good to see that you're there. And so anyway, I was like, you know what? I've done the right thing. I'm sad that I wasn't there, but I'm really glad that I got to experience, you know, it anyway.
Please tell me that it finished with glitter cannons.
No glitter cannons. You know what, though? I thought the exact same fucking thing. I'm like, where are the glitter cannons?
Production.
I could have sworn that's how it was going to end. I was like, where the fuck are they? Unless they were outside and I didn't have that camera on. Yeah, right. I did not see glitter cannons. They might have been for occupational health and safety reasons.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, maybe, you know, remember when Hunter S. Thompson, like, got Johnny Depp to shoot his ashes into space or whatever in fireworks. Maybe there was a glitter cannon version of that for Pammy at the end. No hope. Yeah. So, Monday morning, Andy, her son, has COVID. I definitely would have hugged him.
Oh, yeah.
Corinne has COVID. Definitely would have hugged her.
Yeah.
Ted Robinson has COVID, definitely would have hugged him. And so me thinking that I had COVID stopped me from getting COVID.
Yeah.
But as somebody pointed out to me, if I'd gone to that funeral, I would have thought that I gave everyone COVID. Because I would have come back and tested positive and then everyone else would have, and I would have been like, fuck, that was me.
Yeah.
I'm the super spreader.
Yeah. And you know what? You do enough flagellating. You don't need to add any to yourself that you have to. And, you know, you do have to think about Gruen, because if, you know, people get sick on Gruen, like, who the fuck are you going to have replace, you know, like, your panel? Like, you'd be having to get Anthony Aykroyd's ad man from the 80s to come and... what was his name? Adam? Was that his...
Adam the ad man, wasn't he? Adam?
Yeah. Doing big lines of coke on to get through an episode of Gruen.
I mean, I'm not saying we couldn't do that. No. We've had Russell out for 5 episodes of the 10 this season because of COVID and other things. And it's been hard, like, just to fill one seat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. If we lost the whole panel on the day. And also we've had to have the conversation around who replaces me.
Right.
And it's like... There is a part of you that, like, I mean, for me, the greater good is the show, right? Like, I just want to make sure we pick somebody who can best serve the show and the show can be as good as it could possibly be. And I honestly do think that. Like, I do believe that. But it's amazing that once, in a theoretical sense, we've always had the conversation of, if you're sick, who will we get to replace you? You know, we always have somebody on standby, of course. Like, you know, we would be derelict in our duties if we did not do that.
Yeah.
But basically, my plan has always been, I'm just not going to get sick, right?
Yeah.
But now we live in a world where the idea that you can just not get sick is not something that you can bank on in any way. There is a real chance that at some stage I am going to get sick and somebody else is going to have to host the show. And as soon as we started talking about names in a realistic way, I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, Grant Denyer's not doing anything at the moment.
I mean, that's what I need to do. I need to get someone who I know people would hate more. Like, the problem was, like, all the names that we suggest, I'm always like, yeah, that would be good.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, they do a great job.
Yeah, that's the last thing I need. Yeah. Need someone else working out that I can do that, and then I'm out. Yeah, I feel that way about relationships.
Okay, so that was a bit of a journey off, a wander off into the woods, but continue,
perfect,
please.
So I was just starting to feel better. That's what I've just been feeling the last week. Funnily enough, the flu brought on some long COVID symptoms, and so I've just been in and out of vagueness, a little bit of fatigue, you know, the usual bullshit. So it was literally on Thursday, I just kind of was brushing my teeth, and I looked and I went, oh, you're starting to just look normal, you're starting to look a bit healthier, and that's a relief. I'm not coughing anymore, it's great. So feeling good, you know, my hair's longer than it's been since I was about 13, so it's been fun. So I've been doing these support spots for Hard Quiz Live with Gleason.
Yes.
And they're fun, as you can imagine. They're very fun shows.
Yeah, I haven't seen the show, but I've talked to him about the show and what the show is. And so I've got a bit of a sense of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's great. It's really great. You get you get, I do support for this run. There's a little break. He does like 20 minutes of stand-up, which is great. And then it's the show. And it's, you know, it's really fun. And, you know, we did the Enmore Theatre. You know what the Enmore's like. Weirdly, 1,600 people, feels like you're performing to 300. It's really intimate. Mm-hmm. That was fun. So we've been at Chatswood. So anyway, last night I go out, do the gig. Really fun. Feeling great about myself. And I go backstage and some friends of ours who were there come back. And we're having a chat. And my mate's wife says to me, "Oh, as soon as you walked out, I turned around to Nick and I, when we saw you, and I said, Larry David." And I was devastated because people might not know this, but you have had this secret plan for decades to try and turn me into your George Costanza. And I had only just read 3 days ago that Jason Alexander had a point where he realized Costanza was based on Larry David. And I'm here to tell you, Jerry, I'm not happy.
I mean, I could not be more into this.
I know.
As you would imagine. Because my great love of Seinfeld is, and again, I'm not saying you are George Costanza. There are just elements of George Costanza's personality that if you were drawing Venn diagrams,
yeah.
Like,
it's one of the reasons I keep fit, so despite your desire for me to become Costanza.
Yeah, I mean, I would like you to lean into the Costanza of it all, and you refuse to do that, which is the only thing. You refuse, Will. You refuse. So the idea, so for people who don't know, I assume that most people do know, but for people who don't know, because apparently Jason Alexander didn't know early on, was that Jerry Seinfeld, the character of Jerry Seinfeld on the TV show Seinfeld, is based on the person Jerry Seinfeld. The character of George Costanza is based on the other creator of Seinfeld, Larry David, who just wasn't in the show, but is now the star of his own show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And you can see from Curb what elements of his personality were like. Here's what I will say. I think I would still like to hang out more with George Costanza than I would with Larry David.
I feel like
a bit of Larry, of course, like it's the essential essence that's in there.
Yeah.
But there is something about what Jason Alexander brought to Larry David's personality that makes it a little bit more palatable to me.
Yeah. It's like, do I really want to have the Colombian Coke, or do I want to have the stuff that's been cut up a little bit and I will eventually get to sleep?
Exactly. I don't want to, Larry, you feel like, You do you.
Yeah.
You know, you do you, boo. I'm into it.
Yeah.
But you know what? I like this guy's version of you.
Yeah.
It's a bit better.
Yeah. So you can imagine when they told me that last night, in a split second, I was like, what a bummer. And Will's going to be thrilled.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I mean, I would love to see a Curb Your Enthusiasm. Not that that is, like, that aspect of Larry David's life, which is the, you know, getting caught in these incredibly awkward, politically incorrect situations is not really what I identify.
Yeah.
The essential elements of this character and you. It's more the
overreacting.
Like, overreacting and the obsession with, like,
minutia.
Interesting details of things. Yeah. Or, like, just, you know, I think that's more what it is.
Yeah. But, you know, I've got to thank you. I do 120 push-ups a day, and it's all to make sure I don't get that little rotund body that you are hoping for.
I mean, you can at any stage, though. That's the great news. Is like it, just because it's not happening now doesn't mean it can't still happen. Yeah. I mean, if I wait long enough, it'll happen. Like, it happens to everybody, unless you become one of those... No. Like, speaking of Seinfeld, unless you become one of those Lloyd Bridges older school exercise types.
Yeah, I'll be one of those guys that at 60 will look 75 because I've just got no moisture in my body from all the working out
fat
that I do.
None of the, exactly.
Nice,
none of the things
skin
that you actually need. Just wrinkle. Just pure wrinkle.
But at least I'm thin.
Look at him.
At least I'm thin, Jerry.
There you go. That's a Twitter account, Superfit Costanza. That'd have like 1.2 million followers by like next Thursday.
Yeah, I'll get onto it today. I'll make it happen. Hey, it's so I was also thinking of you this week because I was devastated. People might not know, but you're not xenophobic, but you are against movies with subtitles or TV shows with subtitles. It's
well, it's not that I'm against them. That's not. No, I think that's a mischaracterization.
Is it? Is it, Jerry?
Yeah, it is. It is. I think it is. Here, most of what I watch,
you listen to.
Yes. I mean, but I am often doing something else.
Yeah, you've heard every episode of Law and Order. Sorry, seen? No, heard.
Well, okay, I'm going to give you a real insight into this week, right?
Yeah.
So I had some work that I needed to be doing, but I also wanted to watch the new series of Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
And
same.
So I put it on, and I know Westworld is one of those things that, like, you need to concentrate a bit on, like, there's, you know, clues and mysteries and those sort of things. But I couldn't. I had some other stuff that I needed to do. But I didn't want to wait either. I was excited about the new series. So yeah. I put on the first episode and I was doing my work, and I got to the end of it and I was like, oh, I don't know if I took any of that in.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure that I know. So I was like, you know what? I don't have time to watch it again because I know that I just won't watch it. Like, you know, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on YouTube, and I bet some nerd has gone on YouTube and done like a breakdown of everything that happened in the first episode. And yeah. I've watched it in the background. I'm just going to get a nerd's recap of what went on, and I'll feel like that's good. I've watched the episode. I don't have to rewatch it. He can give me the bits that I missed.
Yeah.
It was so successful that for the second episode, I was like, fuck it. I've been doing this the wrong way around. I watched the nerd recap first, right?
Oh, my God.
Where the nerd's like, you know, he's all the bits you might have missed. And I was like, I did miss all those bits because I have not watched the episode yet.
That's funny.
And then I put the episode on in the background, tippy-tappy-typey away.
Yeah.
Perfect. Because I was like, that's, you know, I knew when the important bits were to look up.
Yeah.
I was like, Oh, he's still alive.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Tapper, 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 tapper.
Wow, I can't believe these episodes go for 6 minutes now. Do you read the last page of a novel?
No. I think it's purely, anyway, it was purely because what I'm saying is I watch so many of the things that I consume.
Yeah.
I consume while I'm having to work. So,
FYI, I'm enjoying the season of Westworld. I feel I don't think last season landed the plane, but what I'll always respect about this show is it's made up of heaps of things I'm into, and it takes wild swings. And I would rather see something that takes wild swings than is a cookie cutter production line of movies and TV shows. G'day, Marvel.
Yeah. Like, so far, it feels like they could make up for last season by having some of the things that happened in last season be really important to how they pull off this final season. It does feel like the season might feel better in the mix of four.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
as a,
like, you know,
standalone.
Yeah.
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 No, if they manage to pull off this season. And it does feel like there's potential,
yeah,
for sure. Like, I definitely enjoyed both the nerds recap and the background watching of those episodes.
And what I heard. So the reason I was thinking of you is I've only got one episode to go, but I've been watching the Netflix series Dark, which is a German series, 10 episodes a season, and it's set in a small German town near a big nuclear power plant. Mm-hmm. And a young child goes missing. And that's the premise. But here's where you would be drawn in. Mm-hmm. It involves a lot of time travel. There is so much time travel going backwards and forwards through time where different ages of the same characters are meeting up and everyone's lying to each other about what they're trying to achieve because they're trying to stop the apocalypse. There's a thing called the God Particle that has appeared that they're using to travel backwards and forwards. It has all the kind of stuff that goes on in Game of Thrones in ways that makes you feel very awkward, and it lives completely and utterly up to the title, and it is fantastic. It has just been so good, and I reckon you should find those YouTube clips that explain each season because you'd have a really fun time.
Okay, now spoilers, if this is spoilers for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
Is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once a time travel film?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I thought somebody said to me the other day that, it, like, I was like, I've been trying not to read anything about it.
Yeah.
But, like, I saw somebody, like, they might have been referencing the show you're talking about, maybe.
Right.
I thought they were referencing.
Dark is definitely time travel, backwards and forwards. Mm. The Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is just multiversal. And it's great because, what you will enjoy about that is, as someone who likes to take a comedy premise and explore every avenue, that's what Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is. Whereas Doctor Strange and the Madness in the Multiverse is the comedian who has an idea, does the joke, and then gets on. And you go, what about all the other ideas that come with it? Like in the Multiverse of Madness, there's this crazy moment where they go to this other universe.
I saw it.
Where
I saw the
green is actually, stop.
I watched
and
the
red is going. Madness. Madness.
The crazy thing is they have this moment where they go through all these different multi universes.
Yep.
Like, and like one of them is like paint or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's a universe made up of paint. And we're there for half a second.
Everything's just paint. And you're like,
stay there.
Well, that'll look good.
Yes.
Like, can we not go back to any of the options you just flicked through? Like, Paintland. Just give me, like, 30 seconds in Paintland.
They went to a world where pizza's delivered as a fucking ball. Madness.
But not
Madness,
even cooked.
Jerry.
Yeah, but you know my problem with that is? Like, A, the difference in that universe is that, like, red means go, but that pizza comes in a ball, but also uncooked because it looked really uncooked.
Oh, it looked awful.
It did not look like a cooked pizza. And like, why would pizza come in a ball? That is a really terrible way to make pizza.
Madness, Jerry. Like, at least put it in the bowl and have it bounce back and forth between your hands. Do you know what I mean? It was like, what a disaster of a film. I was so bored. I was genuinely bored. And that is the worst thing you can have in a movie.
I was doing some other stuff while I watched
what?
It. So,
so anyway, I've watched this YouTube clip.
I've got to say, to watch in the background, it was absolutely fine. I expected it to be worse than it was, and there was moments of it that I actually really enjoyed. I have no idea what the character... Like, there is no more inconsistent character or less consistent character than Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe, though.
Right.
He has different powers and a different way of interacting with the fucking universe in every single one of the movies that he appears in, I think.
Yeah, it's magic. Magic can do anything, which means they don't do anything. It's so boring. That's my
magic.
And it looks cheap as well. Like there's a point where he gets captured and he's got handcuffs on, and I'm just sitting there thinking, move your hands in opposite directions. It'll snap those fucking plastic handcuffs. Like, what is it's such a bummer. But then you watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it is so when I saw it at a preview, and the cinema was laughing like a comedy in the 90s. You know how hard audiences used to laugh, and there's moments where you are laughing so hard at the audacity of what they're doing, and then it hits something and it's incredibly poignant and you're really moved. And then it follows it up with something that's even more ridiculous than the last thing that you saw. And it's essentially just a story about a woman trying to do her taxes and keep a family together. And it's great.
Have you watched the George Carlin documentary?
No, I haven't yet. No, it's there.
You know what? I think you should.
Yeah.
I think that you would really enjoy it.
Yeah.
The thing that I found most fascinating, and I know quite a lot about George Carlin. Like, I've always been a really big fan of his, and he was very instrumental in just because, like, there wasn't a lot of comedy available when we were young. You know, these days you can literally know, like, LA open micers because you can be on their Instagram and, you know, see little clips they've posted and stuff. But back in the day, there was really limited things that particularly made it to Australia when it came to comedy. But George Carlin's books and George Carlin's specials were, like, they were things that did make it here. And so it was really mind-blowing to me, well before I ever, like, discovered people like Bill Hicks and people like that also had that influence. Like, Carlin, but his wordplay, like, I knew it was good, but to see his entire career and see that the one constant, because for people who don't know the George Carlin story, he was, like, he was a weatherman. He's done kind of goofy acting. There's been very big stages of his career, but then there's been stages where he's leaned into, like, obviously, you know, his nihilism about humanity and, like, you know, those iconic routines around, like, abortion and free speech and, you know, being arrested, all those sort of things. But that's not all that he is. But the one constant through every single stage of his career is he just loved wordplay.
Yeah.
And to see him, when you talk about that idea of taking one concept and then just looking at it from every angle.
Yeah.
Like the amount of times where, like, I mean, his famous seven words you can't say on television routine that, you know, ended up getting him arrested and, you know, whatever, changed censorship laws forever, like in good ways and bad ways, as they show in the documentary. And it's, like, he has this incredible conceit about there's 400,000 other words in the English language, and we decided that seven of them are different, and then explores it. Why are they different? Like, what do these words mean? Why can you say the word ass when you're referring to a donkey, like the savior rode in on his ass, but you can't use it in the other... Like, it's so brilliant, right? And there's a period where he's not doing, you know, really sort of edgy, you know, the stuff that he became famous for. But he has this routine about how a house is just a place to keep your stuff.
Right.
And that your stuff is your stuff, but other people's stuff is their shit and vice versa, right?
Right.
And there's this insight at the heart of it, which is... Yeah, that's it. That's what we all think, that our stuff is important and, you know, we don't have the same empathy for other people's stuff. And this routine isn't really about that, but they, in the documentary, they explore, you know, there's a few comedians talking about how it's about something that's much bigger than that. It's fucking cool. But the thing that is most interesting about it is this is a man who had like four or five really distinct stages of his career, and some of them were not good.
Right.
Some of them he went away and was performing to fucking no one, and like his career was basically dead. He was Bill Burr's.
Is that, why you thought of me then? Was that the
No, Bill Burr's in it. And Bill Burr talks about going to see him and how he was young and him and his mate were gonna go and laugh at him.
Right.
They were, like, it was that idea of going to see like some old school comedian, and they're like, let's go and see blah blah blah, who used to be like edgy and funny, and we're gonna go along and like actually laugh at him, and then went and saw him and was like, the fuck's this? This is amazing.
No, well, that's kind of in the music world, that was a little bit, not going to laugh at him, but that was a bit similar to Johnny Cash. Like, wasn't he performing in kind of off-road little dives, and Rick Rubin went and saw him and then said, oh, I'll produce an album for you. And Cash's career was at such a low ebb, he couldn't get his head around why this guy wanted to produce him.
Yeah. And so, then he just went on and made some of the most iconic music of fucking all time. Again, like had a huge, you know, final stage of his career, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so that's a two-parter, isn't it? Because I've got it, I think I've got it listed on.
Yeah, it's about like, I think it's about 3 hours all up. So yeah, it's a decent, like it's really good, and there's lots of, you know, I mean, Seinfeld's in it, and, you know, Chris Rock's in it, and, you know, like, there's lots of good, interesting people. Kelly, his daughter, who's really fantastic, like, you know, tells a lot of the story, so, and it's great because they really talk about his personal life, but not in one of those ways where sometimes I find that stuff so intrusive, but they really just talk about it, how it affected his life and his work and whatever, and, you know, it's not, you know, it's not done in some sort of over-dramatized way. It's just done in a very kind of truthful way.
Yeah, great.
It's well made. It's really well made. It's really, it's made with a lot of love, and it's really interesting. I would highly recommend it to people. Yeah. And he definitely, at the end of his career, like at the end of his life, like there's this real bit at the end where, because he got dark. Like Colbert talks about the fact that he goes, he got too dark for me. You know, he had this very nihilistic worldview that was very much, you know, that he liked people as individuals, but he hated groups, and he thought that humanity was like going to destroy itself and going to destroy itself very fucking soon. And like, that was that his whole big, you know, the planet's going to be fine.
Yeah.
It's with, you know, it's us that are in trouble. And I was watching that and I was like going, yeah, I get how bleak and nihilistic that is. Like, you know, because he's talking about the idea of, he goes, well, I've given up on humans. I'm just going to enjoy them for the entertainment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's this debate at the end about whether he was like playing a nihilist or whether he actually believed, like he really did have that despair for humanity at the end. But I was watching it going, and they don't really come to a conclusion other than, I think that the reason that he was so angry with humanity was that he had such great love for humanity.
Yes.
I really think that he, more than anyone, like, looked at the idea of what we are and how miraculous, you know, the idea that we're here, that we've been here for a couple of 100,000 years, like, in the grand scheme of, like, the planet and the universe, it's fucking nothing.
Yeah.
And we're here, and it feels like we're just on a fucking rush to, like, he talks about that idea of, like, you know, the industrial ages. Like, we've only had factories for a couple of 100 years.
Yeah.
And that's how we've fucked most, like, really most of the things we've fucked up really severely.
Yeah.
Have happened in the last 200 years. And I was watching it thinking, yeah, this is dark. And yeah, this is nihilistic. But is this not also 100% true?
Yeah. it's just a fact, isn't it?
It's just a fact. And yeah, like, he's not saying it now. He was saying it 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I reckon...
He was right. He was just right. He just said what, like, was happening, and it's only continued to happen more since he said it.
My fears for the future have made me very present in the now. So one of the things I was doing recently was I watched the latest season of Barry, and there was a...
I hear it's great. I've never watched Barry, but I hear nothing but good things about it.
Oh, I love it. Like, I really love it. And some people complained that the show got too dark this season, and it's like, you know, it's a TV series about a hitman. It was dark in the first episode, in the first scene of the first episode. It's always been dark. But once again, Bill Hader.
What's the name of the... Bill Hader.
Yeah.
That's right.
So,
Bill Hader.
Is
he the one who does impressions, or am I getting him confused with somebody else?
He's done impressions in the past, and he was in Trainwreck. And I was lucky enough to do...
Yeah.
I got to co-host radio with John Fain when Bill Hader was in. So I got to have a chat to him, and he was a delight. For someone who had just been on, you know, had flown from America and quite clearly had jet lag, he was really engaged, and even off air as well was great.
I think he's the one who's in the South Park, who worked at South Park as well, and he's in the South Park documentary 7 days there.
Yes.
He seems... I've seen him... I watched actually recently a whole bunch of, like, it was just YouTube clips, like, you know, of him doing impressions of people.
Yeah.
He's very talented, but that's not what this show is, right? This show is, like, darker.
He's a hitman who ends up taking acting lessons. And it has Henry Winkler in it, the Fonz, who is wonderful, and Sarah Goldberg, who is also wonderful. And but this season...
Can I say this about Henry Winkler? Did you know? So Henry Winkler, notoriously one of the nicest people in show business. Like, if people always ask about who is actually a genuinely nice person, the two people who normally get mentioned are Tom Hanks and Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
Are you aware that they are enemies?
What? No.
So I thought, here's one for you then. Because for people who don't know, like, you would not nominate Tom Hanks as one of the two best people in show business, would you?
Look,
you've come around a bit.
There was a period where, you know, the Oscar speech after Philadelphia and the back-to-back with Forrest Gump, I was out. But then, to be honest, with the advent of mobile phones and people asking if they could have their photo with him when he's quite clearly out to dinner with his wife, and he always lets people take a photo, that kind of won me over.
Yeah. I actually was won over by when the paparazzi tripped over his wife and he told them all to get fucked.
Oh,
I thought that was pretty good.
I respect
good.
That too, yeah.
Okay, so Tom Hanks, notoriously a nice guy as well. People speak very highly of, you know, Tom Hanks and what he is like. Tom Hanks and Henry Winkler have been in this, like, feud for, like, 20 years or whatever.
Is it real or is it for show?
It's real.
Right.
I'm gonna Google it.
Okay.
Does
Tom Hanks feel like he should have been Fonzie? Did he go for the role in...
It honestly had to do with working together.
Right.
So, okay, here we go. Let me see this. Okay, so This is all right, here we go. This is an article from March 10, 2022. Okay, so this is pretty up-to-date information. I will give the author of this some credit. Leah Beck, her name is, and it's on something called Best Life. So I don't know the legitimacy of Best Life,
the
website,
good.
But it was the first one that came up and I clicked on it. So here we go. If you know about their reputation for being two of the nicest people in Hollywood, there we go. Well, you should. We just mentioned it. Then you'd be surprised that Tom Hanks or Henry Winkler would have a feud with anyone, let alone each other. But it's true. Reportedly, the tension between the two actors dates all the way back to 1989 when they were working on the movie Turner and Hooch together.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, I don't know. Winkler was hired to direct the 1989 movie Turner and Hooch. Winkler was replaced as the director of the movie. And
by Hooch.
Winkler believed it was that he and Hanks did not get along.
Right. That's interesting.
During a 29 appearance on Watch What Happens Live, Winkler explained, "I was directing that movie for 13 days. And then I was called into producer Jeff Katzenberg's office."
Yep.
"Which I assume was a toilet on the..." Yep. That's where Fonzie takes all his meetings.
Just in front of the jukebox.
And said, "Do you have everything with you? Go home."
Wow.
So in 1993, Winkler was interviewed by People and said, "Let's just say I got along better with Hooch than I did with Turner."
Wow. 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 That's great. Good to hear
recently,
about Hooch, though. I loved Hooch.
More recently, well, you'll like this then. More recently, during his Watch What Happens Live appearance, the Barry star said, "I got along great. Great with that dog. Love that dog."
He is funny.
When asked if he'd ever watched the film, he joked, "I don't remember the title of that movie." Oh, man.
Wow. That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Well, he is magnificent in Barry. And this I really love this season. This is also a TV series that takes big swings each season and, you know, really kind of resets itself and follows ideas through to logical conclusions, to the extent that sometimes people get a bit upset and they go, "Oh, I want it to be like the old series." But it's like, no, because it's constantly moving forward.
Yeah.
But anyway, the reason I bring it up is Bill Hader was recording a podcast with Sean Fennessy on The Ringer after every episode of season 3, and it was great. Mm. So he was breaking down the creative process and how they came up with ideas, etc. But at one point, he talked about how during the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, he and comedian John Mulaney would call each other and do Johnny Depp impersonations to each other. And because Johnny Depp would pause for a long time between each word, they'd have to try and guess what the next word was. And it made me laugh so hard. And it also gave me some inspiration, which is I rarely, especially, you know, post, you know, lockdown of COVID, mm-hmm. I've lost the art of calling my friends for 5 minutes to talk shit. Just to
for
talk
fun.
Shit. Just like it's not important. It's just like, and so like as an example, a couple of weeks ago, I called our friend, the comedian Josh Earl, and it was a Saturday afternoon. I knew he'd be with his family. I said, "Can I have you for 4 minutes?" And I gave him a 3-part quiz based on a basketball podcast we listened to.
Okay.
And we both laughed pretty hard. And then I said, "This was just for us," and then I let him go. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be a little bit more present now in dumb little things like that with my friends to kind of, you
bring
know,
some dumb fun back.
Yeah, instead of focusing on the end of the world.
Everything's been so serious and it is so overwhelming and things are so hard that the idea that you are being comedic is also a gift. It's like it's a little, you know, little just, "Oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was funny."
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, we just had a little laugh together.
Yep. And then you move on. And it's great.
Yeah.
And the joke sticks with you.
Mm.
Like you're in a good
mood. Well, now that COVID's over, I think it's a good time to really
I'm
get
so
back
so glad
into
it's over.
That.
I'm back out licking Stobie poles. I'm fucking rubbing my nuts all over things. It's fantastic. It's great.
Did you stop rubbing your nuts on things
for a while
during COVID?
Yeah. Yeah. I was really
just
paranoid. Didn't want to get ball COVID. I hear that's the worst.
That's the worst one. It's the one that Nicki Minaj's cousin got.
Yeah, I know. Poor thing. It was a disaster. So I have a sporting question for you.
Okay, yeah, ask away.
Are you
Steve Smith, 104, averaging 60, still one of the greatest batsmen in the world, despite not having made a century for 16 innings. Made one last night against Sri Lanka. Is that the answer?
Yeah, that is the specific question I was about to ask. Mm. So it's the weekend where Nick Kyrgios has made the final of Wimbledon. Yeah. And I have
surely there's been the headline. Surely you can't be Kyrgios at some stage in his career. You would have thought, right?
I have a feeling that you may have just broken new ground.
You can't be. I'm going to just Google. Surely you can't be
Kyrgios.
Sirius comes up, obviously, but
yep.
Kyrgios, isn't it?
Has surely it come up? You
can't. Here we go. It does seem to be something. Surely you can't. Actually, you know what?
Get in touch with put it out there to the highest bidder.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that this podcast, we're recording on a Saturday, so we don't know what the result is going to be.
No.
And also the headlines will all be out by the time that people hear this.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Do you think that Surely You Can't Be Kyrgios is going to be one of the headlines? Is there a chance that, because he's playing Novak Djokovic in what most tennis fans are hoping for, a nil-all draw.
With heaps of injuries. But I have a very specific question about Australian athletes, right?
Okay.
And so to give you some perspective on this question, which is, I feel like there's something about Australian athletes that frustrates me, and it appears to be a lack of theatre. We kind of mistake bad behaviour for theatre at times. And the reason I bring this up is I watched the NBA finals this year, and it was between the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics, and I was barracking for Golden State. They go and play in Boston. Boston's crowd is one of the smartest NBA crowds of all time, and they pinpointed the antagonist for Golden State, Draymond Green, and they were just chanting, fuck you, Draymond, over and over again. And for a strong personality, it threw him. In game three, it really kind of threw him off his game because he'd never had that kind of full-on attention directed.
Never had a whole bunch of people, the stadium of people, the people saying, fuck you.
Like,
I mean, it does feel like it would probably put most people off.
Yeah, yeah.
As a tactic.
Yeah.
Like, just, that's got to get inside your head. We've both had bad gigs. Like, imagine trying to...
Hang on, mate. Wait a second.
You've never had a bad gig.
Never had a bad gig.
Never had a bad gig.
Someone tweeted me that the other day, and I was like, I'm glad to see that still hanging out there.
Sorry. I forgot who I was talking about.
Jesus Christ, mate.
You've never had a bad gig.
Jerry!
I have. I have had some bad gigs in my time. And I've never had thousands of people chanting, fuck you, Will Anderson.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Will Anderson. I do believe that it would be hard for me to continue to do my job effectively if that was happening.
So in game four, Steph Curry, who is one of the most beloved NBA players and is a very affable guy and a showman, did something I've never really seen him do before, but he started drilling shots and he started going the crowd. He started going them. And what you realized over time was he was drawing the attention off Draymond to make it easier for him.
Yeah. You guys say, fuck you, Steph Curry. See how that turns out for you guys.
Yeah, right? And he is drilling shot after shot after shot. And for someone who, he's a showman, but he's never, put on this.
He's not normally demonstrable towards the crowd. That's not his shtick.
And I saw, I've been watching him for over a decade, and he did my favorite thing that I have ever seen him do. And he has done a lot of things that I have found thrilling. In game six, when they were up 3-2 and they were in Boston, and Boston had to win to stay in the game, and Boston started off really strong. It looked like they were going to force a game seven. Steph Curry went nuts. And in the NBA, you win a championship ring. He went nuts and he hit this long three-pointer with players all over him. And he turned around, looked at the crowd, pointed to his ring finger and said, put a fucking ring on it. and it was amazing, right?
Yeah. You're like, I like it. I will put a ring on it.
I will put a ring on it. And then when they won the championship, they all went back to the locker room and they all surrounded Draymond and jumped up and down yelling out, fuck you, Draymond. And that's funny, right?
I mean, it's funny.
It's really funny. Why don't Australian athletes seem to exhibit that kind of swagger, theatre and humour? Like, what is it?
Well, tall poppy syndrome is like what I would say firstly. People right. don't want – it comes across as arrogance. Like, and I know what you mean about the idea. So, Kyrgios, obviously the elephant in the room is that, like, there's an assault charge that is pending against him. And, you know, who knows? It's just a charge. Yeah. Like, you know, who knows what the legitimacy of it all is. But it's probably worth stating that yeah. that is a real thing that has happened. So, you know, he might be a terror. So let's just take, you know, his real life out of the equation and talk about him as an athlete and how he performs in the media. We are so starved for personality
yeah.
that him shutting down a fucking... So that there was the English... The clip that went around of the English journalist who was trying to get up him for the fact that he'd worn his, like, red Jordans onto the court for a post-match thing, and that was against the Wimbledon dress code or yeah. fucking whatever. And, yeah. like, this British guy was being very British and also a complete hypocrite. Like, there's plenty of times that people have worn colours on, yeah. you know, centre court at Wimbledon and... it was post-match. It wasn't during a game. Like, it was so ridiculous. They were just looking for a way to pick at him. But his response really did shut the guy down. But it was, like, grumpy and arrogant and yeah. whatever. It was only that we thought the guy asking him the questions was such a dick that anyone slapping him down, you were like, okay, I'm on your side. But it was not done with any flair
no.
or any particular... like, he is a showman on the court. There is no doubt about the fact that yes. Kyrgios on the court is a showman. The way yes. he plays his tennis is exciting and thrilling and unpredictable, and you never know what's going to happen next. And, like, he's going to leave it all out there in some way, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. It's like you're going to see it all, like, you know. But I do think that Australian athletes traditionally, like Leighton Hewitt, like, was... you know, a showman in his own way. Like, Pat Rafter was a showman in his own way, but they're not those sort of characters that you're talking about. Ash Barty was very down to earth.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think Australia's love of Ash Barty
yes.
is indicative of why there's not those big, showy, flashy people, is yeah. that what we respond to as a country is... because Ash Barty, as good as Ash Barty is and was, because she is... an absolute gun. Like, yeah. you know, she was the number one female tennis player on the fucking planet. Like, you know, no doubt about that. She won a couple of Grand Slams, but she won like two Grand Slams, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then retired.
Three.
Yeah. Three Grand Slams and then retired. And so that's good, but like Serena's won like 20 or whatever, yeah. right? Like, it's not... And, you know, who knows what Ash would have gone on to do, of course. But I think that what Australians love about her the most is she goes to the footy and she has a beer and she's yeah. super humble. And she, I think the closest that we have to it is the Australian of the Year, Dylan Allcott.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I think Dylan Allcott, because he's in, for people who don't know Dylan, he's in a wheelchair. And I think part of his mission statement is no. Like, don't think, you know, I'm some honourable, you know, person to be, like, yeah, inspiration porn. I'm going to be, like, a fucking rock star. I'm going to masturbate my sex expert girlfriend with a vibrator in a fucking restaurant. I'm going to go to rock festivals and get fucking carried above the crowd. I'm going to, like, you know, actually, I think he has it, you know. Yeah. Like, but he has it in a way that we can also respect, which is, you can tell that the people he competed against in the world he was in respected the shit out of him, and that it was the show business.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think he's gone, well, I'm going to make wheelchair tennis not just something that people go, oh, look at how good they are at that. Isn't that incredible that they get to do that? But instead be something that people follow and, you know the personalities of, and, you know, start to have that connection with it. So I think he has a bit of it.
Yeah. But, you know, like, if Kyrgios had been asked about his shoes, if he'd turned around and said, what? Oh, I'm colorblind. Mm. Like, what color are they? And they'd said red. And he said, what's red? Like, I would have laughed my ass off, you yeah. know? But it's, but we, you know, like, Warnie had it. And but even if Steve Waugh had it. Steve Waugh had it as well. Right, you know, you just dropped the World Cup, like, regardless. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, but we've kind of, like, one of the reasons I've drifted from the AFL is I just don't, like, even the players I like, I couldn't tell you anything about them.
I think that there is personality coming back into the game of AFL. I think that they are very inspired, the young AFL players, by American sports.
Yes.
So on Two Guys, One Cup, our AFL adjacent podcast, you can find it exclusively on the Listener app.
Be careful what you type in.
We talk a lot about the idea that we do these pocket profiles.
Yeah.
And we always, one of the questions is what their favorite sport is. And most of the time, it is an NFL or NBA team that is their favorite sport. So I think that you see it on the field, but I think you're seeing it more and more so off the field, is that their role models aren't, this next generation don't want to be Dermot Brereton or Gary Ablett Jr. or Gary Ablett Sr. or, like, you know, Jason Dunstall or whatever. That's not actually the career path they're seeing.
Yeah.
They look at these American athletes and are inspired by the way these American athletes carry themselves. So I actually think that it's that personality is coming back into, like, they have their TikTok accounts, they have their Instagram, they have their own media channels and worlds and audiences. Like, someone like Bailey Smith in the AFL, has a following well out. Like, I mean, his Instagram account is the most followed AFL related Instagram account. It's not because he's putting footy commentary on there. It's because he puts shirtless photos of himself.
Yeah. Well done.
There, right.
Show it off, mate.
Yeah.
Enjoy it while you have it.
Yeah. So I think that he's mostly doing that because apparently one of his friends said he was a real Costanza and wanted him to grow into it. And he's like, mate, he said, fuck you.
Mate, I understand the motivation.
But I do know what you mean. The theatre of the sport.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, I don't know. Like, when it comes to tennis, you follow tennis more closely.
Yeah.
Like, is there theatre around? I mean, Djokovic seems to have theatre around him, but is he a theatrical performer? Rafa and, like, Roger, are these, like, I mean, what is it like in the tennis world? Is there those sort of personalities from other countries?
I guess they're starting to come through. You just, I don't know. It's like, it's a very hard thing to pinpoint. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just got to, that sometimes a sports person can be really good at their sport and it's mechanical. And there's kind of, like, if you watch a Rafa forehand, the forehand follows through and wraps around his head like he's a bullfighter. Like, you know, and it's just about the way you hold yourself on the court. But, you know, it's like, even tennis, you know, like, how much did we love Henri Lecomte? And he didn't win any Grand Slams, but we loved Henri because he played with his flair, and he was, you know, sometimes if he missed a ball, he'd, you know, he probably wouldn't get away with this now, but he'd pretend to be blind with his tennis racket looking for the white line. And you
I
know,
mean, he very was funny. Fun.
Yeah.
Also, his name is French for Henry the Cunt. So,
so good.
How can you not?
If you're going to be named that, you might as well live up to it. So, but yeah, but also I don't want every Australian athlete to be like that,
no,
but
of
I would just,
not.
You know, like I'm dying to have someone that I can really get into and be a big fan of. I'd just like to see a bit of theatrical swagger where, you know, it's for the crowd, but then you're also off the court or off the stage or whatever. You're, you know, an Ash Barty type as well.
Mm. I think Buddy Franklin might be still in the AFL.
Yeah.
Like, Lance Franklin is still sometimes looks like he's playing a different game to, you know, everybody else. And, like, he doesn't say much off the field, but I actually think that's to his benefit. He's like, he's been one of those people who's like, I am going to be Mr. Friday Night Lights, you know? You know, you put me out there and I'll do what it is I do, and then I'm going to have a, you know, he has a, you know, beautiful partner and children that are, you know, in the social pages and those sort of things. But you don't really hear a lot from Lance anymore. Like, you know, so, but when you do hear from him, he always seems lovely.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he does actually seem like a lovely down to earth sort of guy. So I think he has it on the field.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's a guy who seizes the moment and, like, you know, feeds off the energy of the crowd.
He's got the theatre, yeah. And it's, you know, like, especially when he was younger, I've never seen a full forward who was more thrilling when he kicked a point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not a dig. No. But, you know, I once watched him kick something ridiculous in a game, like 2-11, and every one of those points was so exciting.
I mean, there's something beautiful about the way that he plays. Like, you're right. Like, because he's the only guy that you, like, you see him, you go, oh, this will be beautiful. This is his right in his area. He'll smash a Vermeer and he misses and you're like, oh, I mean, it's
still great.
It still looked good.
Yeah.
Still looked great.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter at the end of the day whether he kicked a goal or a point. It looked good. Yeah. He looked good doing it.
Yeah. I think our Australian basketballers have some swagger. Like, Paddy Mills has some swagger.
Okay.
Joe Ingles.
Definitely.
Joe Ingles knows how to talk some shit. Like, that's great. And it's always entertaining. And he backs
Matthew
it up.
Matthew Dellavedova had a different personality, but certainly had, like, a very distinct personality.
And he was...
Andrew Bogut has a terrible personality, but it is a very distinct, like, point of view. Like, he's unafraid to say what he thinks and, like... You know, a lot of the time when he says what he thinks, I violently disagree with his perspective. But I do admire that he has the confidence. Like, I mean, he's, I think, the best example because his stuff is really counter-narrative. Like, and like he believes that he's big, so big that he can say whatever he wants to and involve himself in every debate if he wants to. And and so I think that's that sort of arrogance, if you will, of like going, I am bigger than this, or I am beyond this, or I am my own entity outside this that is fully formed. Like, whatever you want to say about Andrew Bogut, you're like, oh, yeah, well, I get who he is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he is living his legitimate life and how he sees the world. And that is, it doesn't feel like he's pretending. It feels like he genuinely believes what it is that he says.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And
dumb stuff mostly, but
but you know, but I, once again, like with someone like a Mills or an Ingles, once again, I think there's the sense of the theatrical. There's the sense of the moment that they'll play up to, and Dellavedova was kind of in that approach to the game that was. Not as talented at his sport as Leighton Hewitt was at tennis, but that same kind of approach, you know. Like, this is the guy who, when he had to defend Steph Curry in the 15 finals, did, like, ended up in hospital on an IV drip because he was working so hard, but, you know. But
that, to me, is theatrics as well. Not the theatrical that he was like, I have to be in, but, like, knowing that the game is so important.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why Leighton Hewitt, you know, you do get who, like, you looked at Leighton Hewitt and you're like, I get who you are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, regardless of anything else, like, I get who you are.
Yeah.
What about the Josh, the young fellow?
Josh Giddey. Yeah. So I saw him
now,
in
Summer
League.
Now, he looks like he has personality.
I saw him throw a dunk down on some kid in Summer League and he stood over him and I got very excited. I was like, that's what I want to see. That's great, you know?
Yeah. Giddy up.
Yep, giddy up. Exactly. So good.
Could we beat America ever in basketball, do you think?
You know, I think with the way the game is played now, where there is so much emphasis put on the three-point line, sometimes the shot just doesn't drop. It doesn't matter. You could be the greatest shooter in the world, and sometimes you just don't hit it. And sometimes another team becomes unconscious and just starts, like, knocking in shots that they should not be able to hit. Like, even the worst teams in the NBA this year were all competitive. Like, so if you had one of those games where, say, we go 50% from the three-point line and America goes 4 for 38, so then suddenly that's an extra 40 points that you've put up that they've missed.
So basically you're saying we're good enough that if we have our best night and America has their worst, we'll fucking knock them off.
No, but like I've got to be honest, in the Olympics I was hopeful, like, you know, we didn't quite get there, but enough of our kids are getting NBA experience, and now that we've got that bronze medal, like, you know, everyone was barracking in the States. Because everyone loves Luka Doncic, everyone just considered Slovenia to, you know, have we're going to get that. And there's a lot of respect for the Australian team, but we went out with, you know, hard-nose attack. And I think that's why a lot of our players in the NBA this year, poor Joe Ingles got injured. Patty Mills was exhausted by the second half of the season because they put so much into the Olympics. But yeah. this kid, Josh Giddey, is going to be fantastic. And there's a few others coming through who are, you know, they're coming up through the system. And if Ben Simmons can get his head right, that is like that. Oh, that may have been the difference. May have been the difference in getting closer to knocking off America. If he'd been at full level that he can play at, especially as a defensive force, I'm not saying we would have won, but we may have been closer in that in that last game. So I'm pretty excited for Australian basketball, and I'm rapt to see them doing so well too.
I mean, it is exciting. That's what I will say. Australia doing well at basketball.
Yeah.
I think even better for me than the Socceroos, like, you know, because I'm not quite as interested, obviously, in the world game of football. But also, when it does get to the business end and I'm like, okay, you know, it's time now where I will, like, pay some interest to this. It just always feels like there's too many players to learn and I don't really know what's going on and whatever. Yeah. But like basketball is the right amount of people.
Yeah.
Like you can literally just at the start of an Olympic tournament or the start of like a world championships or whatever, just decide I'm going to start today. And then by the end of it, have a real sense of, you know, who everyone is and what their stories are and what their skill set is. It's a good manageable amount of people. Yeah, so
if you know the starting five and you know the first two off the bench, you're pretty good.
You're like, this is good. Look at this.
Yeah.
I get to see Patty Mills play with Joe Ingles. This is pretty fun. I've heard of both those guys.
Yeah. it's easy for me to get behind them.
Yeah. I've heard of this Josh Giddey guy. This is good. I'm actually very much enjoying this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice. You know, our women's basketball team for a long time was so ahead of the curve on the men on the international stage. And I've, you know, some of my favorite players have been, you know, going back to Michelle Timms, just the toughest point guard in the world at one point, and all of those wonderful Rachel Sporn, who was from Adelaide, was one of my favourite players kind of growing up, and then, you know, Lauren Jackson. So it's great to see
So how's this then? So two things. My nieces are all very keen and very talented basketballers.
Oh, have they got your sister's height?
So we don't know yet. Right. It feels like, and like, in their backyard, they have just put in like a proper half court, basically basketball court in the backyard. Like it's all set up. Like they laid down the proper, like it's honestly, mate, I went around there and like I had a sore shoulder for 3 months because I shot too many shots that day. Yeah. But the kids are all great and they've got this beautiful setup in the backyard. They've got that in a pool. I was like, I'm going to move in here. This is like better than my house. Yeah. I want a basketball court. I did until like the next 3 months. I was like, my shoulder's still sore.
Oh, God, but my back, yeah.
One of them, Alice, she went to a basketball camp. She's been playing at quite a high level, and she went to a basketball camp that was run by Michelle Timms, and like she is now obsessed with her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I feel like actually that might be the sort of position that Alice might end up, you know, playing. So that's been fun. But the Lauren Jackson thing is the one that I really want to talk about, which is that she is back in the squad of the Australian women's basketball team at age, what? How old's Lauren Jackson?
Oh, God, it's hard to...
I'll look it up. You guess. I'll look it up.
So it's so hard to tell because I feel like she maybe retired a bit younger than she should have.
She had injury problems.
She had injury problems, but she also was around for a long time. She maybe... Is she mid-30s, maybe?
Okay, 36? So I'm going to... higher.
Higher. 38?
Yeah. Higher.
She's not 40, is she?
She is not 40, no.
So she's 38 and a half. No. 39?
She is 41 years old.
Oh, 41?
Yeah.
Wow. That is
so at age 41, she is, I mean, not necessarily ever going to make it back into the team, but I think the idea is that she will make it back into the team. The hope is, at least, that the ambition at the end, if it all works out perfectly, is that she might end up playing for Australia again at age 41, which would be fucking incredible.
Well, you know, you have enough positions on the team where, you know, in the NBA you have, for the Miami Heat, you have Udonis Haslem, who is the team captain and pretty much played 41 minutes in the last season. But he's such a strong presence and he's been there for 15, 16 years. He's almost like a player coach. And same with Andre Iguodala for the Golden State Warriors. He was curtailed by injuries this year, but he's won three championships with them before, and he's on the side and he's training with them, and so he can kind of coach. So if you have that kind of experience of, yes, it's great to have the coaches here, but you've got someone that you're actually on the court with giving you all of that experience, like, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
And I love her. She was great.
Yeah. I'd like to see that in comedy shows. I think that I'd like that to be the next stage of my career.
Right.
I would like to be the Lauren Jackson of comedy.
Right.
Like, some young people are doing their thing.
Right.
And they just need, like, some older person that they can kind of just have for a bit of, like, yeah, been here, done this, stability.
Yeah.
Play about 48 minutes a year. That's like, that's that. I would love that. I would love to just be, can I be that? One line an episode in whatever your show is, but just good to have around for the experience.
You know what you do? We usually like Haslem, so they'll put him in a game where the opposition's being a bit rowdy and you need him to kind of throw his weight around and get a tech foul in the 2 minutes that he plays. So you go on tour and the crowd's a bit rowdy and you go, okay, give me a tight five. And then you go out, call everyone an arsehole, put them in their place and then set the stage for the next young fella to get up.
Perfect.
Yeah. Seems pretty good.
Just like an emergency host.
Yeah,
like always there, ready to go, but very happy not to get on.
Always suited up. You're there in your sneakers and your shorts and your singlet.
Just if needed. Here if you need.
Yeah. Clapping from the sideline. Sounds like a pretty good tour, actually. Sounds fun.
It does sound like a great tour.
Yeah.
Speaking of tours, I have a little mini run of dates. So I am doing five shows of my award-winning show, Willogical, at the Sydney Comedy Store. So no banner, no background, but the actual same show. So if you've missed that show or you want to see it again, you can come see it five nights only at the Sydney Comedy Store. That's the last time Sydney you'll get to see it. So
when's that?
Please do not miss out. Starts on the 21st or 22nd, so like a week and a half from now. And then I think I've got two shows 1 week and then three shows the next week or something like that. So towards the end of the month, all the details on the Comedy Store website or on my social media. And then August the 8th, I think it might be. Anyway, it's a Sunday night. It's in Melbourne. I'm going to, you know what? I'm actually just going to look it up because that probably is a smarter thing for me to do. Let's go to my calendar and let's go to August. And August the 7th, okay, August the 7th is a Sunday night at the Athenaeum in Melbourne. So one last chance, one final chance for Melbourne people to see Willogical. If you saw it early in the comedy festival and want to see how it developed, or if you just have not seen the show before and you want to come along, it would be awesome to be able to sell out that show at the Ath, which will be the final time probably that I'll actually be doing the show. So August the 7th at the Athenaeum. I would love people to come along to that. That is on sale now.
Great. That sounds exciting.
Do you have any plugs?
So we are coming to the end of this season of the Big Squid podcast. Ben Elwood and I are about to record. We've been doing a deep dive on all of David Lynch's films. So we are about to record the last one for that. And
what's the final one that you're doing?
Inland Empire. So we still have Mulholland Drive, which will go up soon, and then Inland Empire. And the last episode of Space Podyssey, where we've got a two-parter on Into the Spider-Verse, which is a lot of fun. And then it hasn't been announced yet, but fuck it, might as well drop it here. On the 16th of September in Adelaide, we're doing a live Big Squid show at the Rhino Room with Ben Elwood making his Adelaide debut.
Awesome.
And the fabulous Adam Richard getting back up on stage.
Good stuff.
And Tom Gleason is coming down.
Tom Gleason.
And
Hard Quizzes Tom Gleason.
Yeah, that one, not the other one.
Oh,
and Rove McManus is also coming
along. Shut up. Say hi to your mum for me. That Rove McManus.
Yeah, that one. So
fucking hell.
And some other people as well.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
That's already a big squid.
That's why it's already. If anyone remembers and attended the show, if you know if there's one thing you can rely on, I'm going to overbook
quantity.
It.
Yeah, quantity. Can I say this? Like, do you think it, I mean, based just alone on those guests alone, I imagine it's not going to be like a 1 hour recording, right?
It's not. No. I think what we will do is we're going to do like a. I'm thinking of calling it Sticky Feet Comedians. So we'll do. We'll all do like a short stand-up spot, and if we go over time, the lights will go off, and the because guess what? We've all got sticky feet, so. So we'll do that for the first half, and then
except for me, if I was there, I'd just be in the wings, going, "Only if you need me.
Only if you, yeah.
Only if you need me, guys.
If the crowd like, gets rowdy,
yeah, I'm here.
I'm ready
but
to go.
I'm really happy not to go on.
And then for anyone who hasn't heard the podcast before, we kind of celebrate all sorts of styles of art and entertainment, TV, movies, etc., etc. So we're going to be doing some fun segments, like, you know, bring back a TV show, how would you do it, that kind of thing. Oh, we'll unreal. Do record living of the podcast. And we've also got a new segment, which is going to be describe this famous artwork like an arsehole. So we're going to show famous artwork, and you just have to be just some uncouth dick who doesn't appreciate artwork and really explain it. So it's going to be fun.
I mean, that's fine. I am an uncouth dick who doesn't appreciate it. Sounds like a perfect thing for me. Maybe I should make it down to Adelaide. Well, thank you so much for doing this today. I super appreciate it.
No worries.
And it was very nice to talk to you. So make sure that you check out Justin's podcast. And if you're in Adelaide, make sure that you go to that show. And yes, if I could repeat one more time, final chances to see Willogical, Sydney, 5 shows at the Comedy Store, and then one big night at the Ass in Melbourne. So come along. That'll be good.
You're always plugging yourself, Jerry.
Sorry, man. I got some bills to pay. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.